Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, I'm Coach Kelly.
And if you just heard a thump, it's because I slammed the,
into the microphone. I didn't know what was going on. It sounded like an earthquake.
It feels like an earthquake. You know, I have the chair actually up higher than I usually do. I'm used to having it. Oh, there we go. Yeah. We'll lower the chair.
Mine is always low. Voice. Like, I feel like you're like Jack and the Beanstalk over there, and I'm like the incredible shrinking woman.
That's so funny.
It's true.
Oh, is this not a gorgeous day here? Wherever you are all listening from, we are in Southern California, and it is just
It's so funny when gorgeous. People, you know, I say this every time. People from California, I just find it very funny when you guys say, like, oh, it's so beautiful out. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's beautiful out every single day. Or, like, it's a little humid today. I'm like, you guys are so spoiled.
It's
so gorgeous almost every day. Like, I mean, even yesterday it was a gorgeous day for me. It was raining here.
I took a walk in the rain. It was
so lovely. Because it was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I hope we get some more rain. I mean, we really definitely need it. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But we have these gorgeous billowy gray clouds amongst the white clouds. And the mountains are perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, so awesome. Okay,
Halloween? That's what's on your mind? Too much candy over there? So, yeah, we all dressed up as astronauts.
So
it was
cute.
Really cute. My son always, like, my older one always, like, sets the trend. So I'm always like, okay, what do you want to be? And then we dress up around him. Last year, he wanted to be a surfer, so we were all California surfers. And this year, he wanted to be an astronaut. So it was really cool. Even my dog had a little astronaut costume. He had, like, a little rocket, you know, blast
so
up to doggy space. So
we have to post our pictures of Halloween on our Facebook for the show.
We should do that.
Yes,
that's
and everybody
so smart.
Can do likes. And
Yes, exactly. I love it.
Because your guys are so cute. I can't believe you found those costumes.
It was, you know, it's so funny because I'm so obsessed with Halloween. Like, I start in like August, September. It's sick. It's a sickness. It's like, so that's why my one time, you know, to get it all. So yeah, I make sure and I always try to find, you know, matching ones and things like that. So yeah, it was
cool.
That's
amazing. Yeah, this is my first year I actually bought Christmas or holiday decorations before Halloween.
Yes.
Costco was having these adorable gift boxes that are all lit up. They're like really pretty. The large red one and a white one. And they're so cute. You just put them on the front lawn.
No way. I'm totally going to get one of those.
They're so cute.
The nice Jewish girl that I am going to get Christmas lights and celebrate.
Nothing wrong with lights, right?
No, no problem with it. I have a tree. Yeah. I literally have a Christmas tree. David calls it a Hanukkah bush, but you know, whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
I just feel like it's basically celebration to me, you know? It's not about them. Anything else.
So I think I told you my parents were of different religions. My father was Jewish and my mother was Protestant. And the biggest wars that ever occurred in our family were over the holidays because my dad was very specific about nothing Christmas.
My
mom sometimes, you know, she would say, she was sort of like a token Jew. She learned how to make matzo ball soup. She probably made the best potato latkes on
planet
and the best matzo balls. Like, you know how you have some of those, you throw them, they're like concrete inside of them. These are so light and so fluffy. So she was an amazing cook and she would do really great things like that. But one year, it was like my sister and I said, we want to get a tree. We don't care what color it is. You want to make it a Hanukkah bush. I don't care. We want to have a tree. You know, all of our friends have trees. What's wrong with just having a tree?
Right.
Bring the tree home. My dad literally picks it up and throws it out the door. Like, literally,
just my gosh.
Hauling this thing. It was like a 6-foot tree. Just like picked it up and threw it across the lawn.
That was the end of that.
Disappointing.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
We convinced him next year, though, so we were able to have
one.
It's like, you know, Dad, this is not about anti-Semitism. We're not against
Jews.
We go to temples sometimes. We go to, you know, it's like, but let's honor both.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Do you celebrate Hanukkah, too?
I try to celebrate everything that's on the calendar.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even like
speaking of celebrations.
Tell me. I was like, what are you going to tell me? I know.
Kelly and I, Coach Kelly and Dr. Deborah, this is our almost 1 year. It's our 1 year
anniversary
month, right?
It's amazing.
Of November
of
last
starting
year,
the show.
We started the show.
It's crazy.
This is
like
incredible.
Wow.
Oh, I can't believe it. All right, so in celebration,
yeah,
happy anniversary to us.
Wait, do you know my thing about singing when people like leave messages on my... David makes fun of me all the time. So when it's my birthday,
yeah,
my biggest pet peeve is when people sing to me on my machine. It's hilarious. And I can't even tell you how many people do it. I'd probably say if I have 10 friends, 9 do it.
Oh, I would be the one doing it too. I
bet you probably have. Everybody does. Every person sings. It's hilarious.
And why is it a pet peeve? Why do you not like it?
I don't know. I don't know. And it's not their voice. It's not like, oh, they can't sing. I don't know. It's really funny. And I don't mind the song. But for some reason, maybe it's just like on the machine. I don't want to hear it. So it's really funny, though. But it's like Murphy's Law. Like, if you don't want it, more people do it.
Of course.
It's really funny.
But that anyway. Is hysterical.
Yeah. So
well, really you're Miss Personal. I mean, you really like...
Totally.
Face-to-face or hands-on, or at least the voice, not something on a machine. So I guess for you, we would be more empathetic if we thought about Kelly and what she would prefer.
Stop, no, that's so funny. Now you're never going to be able to sing again. You're like going to feel so bad about it.
Now I'm going to worry. I'm going to be who told me that they don't like to sing? Who was it?
But you know what's so funny? Speaking of personal, so you know I'm obsessed with that show Friday Night Lights that I watch all the time.
Uh-huh.
And it's in a southern town, and we've noticed that everything is done face-to-face. They have conversations at the door. They talk to each other. Like, they don't really call each other on the cell phones, and it's really so nice. I feel like you can just have so much more of a conversation, see people's expressions. Like, I mean, of course, it's not doable all the time, but there's something really to be said about all that, you know, personal time and really, like, giving each other that moment.
Well, you and I are really good about that. We'll start a text exchange,
yes.
And then within like 3 exchanges, like, if we're just going to keep doing this, why don't we just talk. You're on the phone, I'm on the phone, we might as well talk. But a lot of people don't do that. I guess it's sometimes it is easier to text, like when you're in the middle of other we're getting a phone call.
Yeah, hang on, let's see.
Okay, hello, you're on there with Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly.
Hello. Okay.
Hello. Are you there?
I guess not. Okay. So anyway.
Well, that was exciting.
Yeah, exactly. We got a phone call.
By the way, though, if you do want to talk to Coach Kelly or Dr. Deborah right now, you can call us at 323-203-0815. And, of course, we always love your emails. This is fun, Kelly. You know, you and I haven't just
done a
shot
show
the breeze here in
for
a long time.
And both of us can just... keep on going. Like, I can't stop talking. So we're not at a loss for things to talk about.
We were supposed to have another guest on
yes.
the first half of the show today, but he wasn't able to make it. But we have a fabulous guest coming up
yes.
in a little while. But we'll hold that surprise.
Yes, exactly. Suspense.
While. Yeah. But it's going to be a great topic because, you know, I thought you and I should talk a little bit about fair fighting.
Sure.
That would be a fun...
Is that like an oxymoron? You know what I mean? But yeah, I know what you're saying.
It's so hard to be kind when you're really mad, you know?
You know, it's so funny. It's like, as a therapist, I feel like I'm advising my, you know, clients when I have couples therapy. It's like, okay, just, you know, take a time out, you know, try not to be mean. And then it's like, when you're in the situation, it is really hard to like not regress to that little like kid who just wants their way, you know?
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of what happens. And it's like you get insulted by what somebody does and then you lash out and they lash out and it becomes this, you know, crazy making.
I was thinking on my walk this morning, like, what is my biggest weapon? And I was going to ask you the same too.
Ooh.
Like, what is your biggest weapon?
Such a good question.
You know, I think mine historically, and it's not really meant to be a weapon. It's my own self-protection is I always just end things. I'm like, okay, that's it.
Oh,
then we're done.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Okay. So if this isn't going to work out, we're done.
Yes.
And I go there really quickly because it's my safety zone. It's
uh-huh.
like, okay, if this isn't going to change and I can't tolerate what's going on, then my answer is I'm done. And I know that that can be so incredibly painful to anybody, even if it's, you know, even with my daughter at times when she would get me so, not she would get me, I would get myself so upset by something that we were talking about or she mm-hmm. wasn't listening or whatever. And I would just go like, that's fine.
Right.
You go live with your dad.
Yeah,
you know, it's like,
yeah.
And I know that was a terrible thing to say because it would really hurt her so deeply. What about you? What do you think is
sometimes
your biggest
weapon?
Sometimes
I can be, and I've really tried not to do it, but sarcastic.
Uh-huh.
Like, and that's biting, you know, that's just like wrong. You know,
I don't think I've ever, have I ever heard you be sarcastic?
I'm not a sarcastic person. It's just, if you get me so angry, I think it's just like, well, you know, well, fine then, go find a new wife. You know, I'm like, I don't know, like, or like, I don't know. I'm trying to think how how, you know, what David says to me when I'm in that place, but I can get a little bit of sarcasm. So that's probably one of them. But yeah, I mean, I also can exit too. If I'm like so fired up now, I've learned to say like, hey, I need a timeout, you know, and that's
much
help.
Better. Much yes. better to say timeout. Or I just need say, a break from this moment.
But it's that I really advise that for my clients, because I feel like when you are so, you know, at that anger level, like no one's receptive. You're not receptive to hearing what they have to say. They're not receptive to you because you're on fire. Like if you take a time out and you reconvene, there's something really like, you know, you're able to speak again.
You can
chill
a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a big proponent of the timeout. So yeah, now I'll just say, hey, I need a timeout.
You know? I have this acronym that I use, the REACT scale, REACT.
Okay.
So the R is for what's the reality of the situation in this moment? Is it, and the E is it an emergency?
Yes. Because
if it's not an emergency, why am I acting as if it's an emergency?
Mm-hmm.
And then A, what's the action that needs to be taken based on this situation?
Yeah.
What are the consequences of that action? And then what do I think about it?
Oh, I love it.
So if I go through that scale, if I can ever get myself to do that when I'm really pissed off, it's helpful because it's kind of calming.
That's
it's just another version, like a mental version of a timeout.
Yes.
Just kind of,
sure.
Sometimes I like structure timeouts to me. I just go and see than my own anger.
Yes, exactly.
Or project a lot of stuff. I know that I always do better when I ask a question, when I say, okay, either the question to myself or the question to whomever it is that I'm having a conflict with, and be able to just say, okay, what's really going on here?
Yeah.
You know, and just really trying to calm it down that way, because almost always behind the anger, as we know, there's fear or there's sadness or there's hurt.
Yes.
There's something that is a more vulnerable feeling that is sometimes hard to get to.
Sure. No, that makes total sense.
I could see you, though, being like, I would never want you mad at me for very long. I
could
just
really?
See it would
getting
be
really,
really
mad?
Tough.
Really? Yeah. Oh, you mean why? Because I would be like so mean?
Yeah, I could see that you could have like a
mean streak.
A little bit.
That's something, you know.
I don't know about mean, but like a cold.
Coldness.
Yeah, that you could really. Because I know how disappointed you get if people aren't kind, right? I mean, you have a very strong value of people being
kind.
Gentle
it's so
and
true.
Kind. Like my entitlement, you know, me with people with entitlement. Oh, I can't, like, that's a hot button for me. So I can imagine sometimes, like, I was afraid that I would never want to disappoint you.
Oh my God, stop. No. Don't, oh my God. You're already so high on my scale that you've got the grace to make some mistakes.
Okay, I got
The good news for me is that even if I do get upset, I don't hold grudges very long.
Uh-huh.
I'm not one of those. Like, sometimes I'm like, I wish I could, cuz it's like, you know, but no, I'm not like, I don't know. I can kind of, like, once you've said the I'm sorry, once we're kind of at that point, it's like, I'm over it. You know, like, sometimes I know people who, like, kind of need a couple more days to sort of, like, soak it in, even though you've said you're sorry. Like, I'm like, okay, once we're at that point, I'm good, you know?
I can totally understand that. I'm all about acknowledgement. Like, if somebody just acknowledges that they either did something that I perceive to be hurtful, whether they intended it or not, it's so much more validating and grounding for me to be able to continue then feeling close and warm and wanting to move forward. But if somebody just persists in feeling so righteous about something that, you know, like, I try to say things like, you know, this is my perception or this is my opinion,
smart,
because I think that that's a fair fight, you know, to be able to say, okay, I don't like this. I know it's on me, but I still want to express that I don't like it.
Sure. Yeah. No, I can imagine you being a very fair fighter. Like, that's how
I'm not. You can call Christopher right now and find out.
This is so
We had a couple doozies this weekend. Yeah. I don't think he would call me
a fair
fighter.
Exactly. No. But I guess the truth is, if you're heated no matter what, like, it's just hard, you
know?
I mean, we're all human.
In theory, I am a fair fighter.
Yes, exactly.
I have the tools and I have the ideas. But sometimes, I don't know, it just I guess a lot of it has to do with moods too, and lack of sleep, or you know, having not eaten well, or you know, I also get much crankier if I don't get to have my exercise. Exercise is such a grounding thing for me.
Yeah.
So like when I have one pathetic Fitbit day of like, I've only gone a couple thousand steps and I didn't get to my 10,000or more, I get cranky.
So
hard for me.
And your thing is every morning you go, like, at the same time.
Pretty
on your
much
walk.
Every morning, at least 6 days a week,
that's
I'm
amazing.
Doing something. And I try to do twice a day if I can.
Oh my God.
An extra little something, either after dinner or later
that's
in the
great.
Day. Because, you know, my back, if I sit all day, and you know, what we do is we sit in an office, and I love my work, but I can tell you sometimes after 6 or 8 hours in one spot, just getting up to go to the bathroom, you know,
it's tough.
can, I, my, back compresses and it gets really tender and sore. So walking is actually the most therapeutic thing I can do for my body, not just for my mental state.
And how long do you go in the morning?
Usually about an hour.
Okay, that's good.
Today I got to have two walks. My neighbor walked with me, but she only had a half an hour, and half an hour just wasn't going to
be enough for me. So you just went along.
So I just went and did another little loop. Jog, walk. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I love to exercise too. If I could do it in the morning, like first thing, it's the best. I mean, now I can't with the kids, but yeah, I love hiking. I like outside too. It's just nice to get that the light, get the fresh breeze. I love it. But yeah,
you're a pretty outdoorsy person, right?
Yeah. And I love swimming too. If I didn't have like the hair issue, like of washing my hair every time,
it sucks to be a woman, or with the highlights or coloring. Ugh, it's terrible. It just wrecks it.
If I ever shave my head, I'm just going to go swimming every time. Like, that's going to be like my prize. You know what I mean? Like, no, I can finally do it.
So what about a cap?
Yes, but then you still have to wash your hair afterward, and it's like a whole song and a dance, you know? I've got high maintenance hair, you know?
It's beautiful hair, though, and you have a lot of it, which is always good.
So cute.
I know. I love to swim, too, but I always tell Christopher, swims generally 5 days a week, sometimes six days a week. Yeah, between like a mile and 2 miles a day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because he used to play water polo, so he's a really good swimmer. Uh-huh. And he was a really good swimmer. I mean, like, he's a really, really good. But by the end of the summer, his hair is blonde, and he has dark brown hair.
Well, it's so funny. Yeah. That's what happened with my older son, with Remy. He had like literally was blonde, because they would go swimming twice a day at camp. And so it became like bleached blonde. It was so funny.
Speaking of the little devils, how are they behaving? Oh, how are they doing? Your kids are so cute from afar.
They are so adorable. Like, and I look at them and I'm like, you are so cute. Thank the Lord, baby Jesus. Yes. Like, that's all I have to say. I mean, you know, they're my little, they're going to be presidents. That's all I have to say, because I keep telling myself they've got to be presidents or some sort of another famous, so I can live in a nice nursing home. And, you know, we'll take care.
I was
going to
say, so what kind of perks do you think you would get if either of them were politicians?
Yeah, let me think. You know what's funny? I don't know about politicians. I can see Remy being like an engineer or something. Like, I don't know. He's really cerebral. He's really bright. And I feel like London, oh my God, it's going to be interesting. First of all, he sleeps with his guitar every night.
Does he really?
So I could see him just being a musician, hopping on a motorcycle and saying peace. Like, I don't know. Like, just... Bye, guys. Like, I'm traveling the world. Like, who knows? Like,
this
I don't know.
This is London, did you say?
Yeah.
The little one.
I think he could do something. I mean, he's very musical. Like, he has the beat. I mean, he's like two, and you could tell he's just got the rhythm. And I know, because I don't have rhythm. So I look at him like, I'm impressed. But yeah, I think he'll do something. I don't know. Maybe musical, or, you know, we'll see. But he's very social. He's like really gregarious. Like, you know, they're different personalities. It's interesting.
But, you know, that could be saying something, though, too, because he's such a creative guy. Mm-hmm. That a lot's going on in that little mind of his. And it may be why some challenges are more difficult for him and for you, because he probably can't express all the stuff that's just going on in that little brain of his.
Yeah, it's true. It's really possible. Yeah.
Because Tiffany was a very strong-willed and difficult little girl at times, too. Oh, she had a temper. And when she decided she didn't want to do something, she would do the cutest thing. She would squat. So we'd be taking a walk. If she decided she was done, she would just literally squat.
Oh, my God, this is so fun.
She'd puff out her cheeks as if she were like a blowfish. Like, if she got bigger, she'd be stronger. And, like, I couldn't move her. I'd literally have to pick her up. She would, like, contain herself like a rock.
This is so
funny.
That is so cute.
Yes. Well, yeah. What's
exactly when you're not in the situation? Right? Yeah, exactly.
It's like, Tiffany, come on, we gotta go. No. Monica. And out the cheeks we go. So cute. But she's super creative.
What was your favorite age with her besides like now and
three?
Oh, three?
Yeah, three and four. Oh, the best.
Oh, interesting.
She had the worst temper tantrums then.
Yeah.
But she was also the most endearing and adorable,
like, loving
and
like
so
sweet.
Much
yeah.
fun and just loved to do everything. Just such a cool kid. She's such a cool kid now. I mean, she's a full-grown young woman.
That's so crazy.
Can't believe she's going to be 23 in December.
That's insane.
Oh, unbelievable. Anyway, you know what? We should do a little recap of our,
Our
show
last week,
which is amazing. And then we're going to have our guest calling in just a moment as well.
Perfect.
Yeah, David Glass. He was our guest last week, an attorney, and also has a degree in clinical psychology. He spoke to us about amicable divorces, and we learned a lot. I think it was really interesting on parent alienation syndrome,
because
so important for people, you know, false accusations and how challenging.
He was a really interesting guy. Like, I feel like I could have continued this like out at like a bar or a cup of coffee. Like, he was just a cool guy that like had a lot of really interesting stories, and it was really helpful for me, and just, you know, a lot of information I had no idea about. That's absolutely a good show.
Yeah, very accomplished attorney, had lots of awards and all that stuff. So really cool guy. Are we getting a call?
Yes. So we got him. Okay. So do you want to do the intro?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello. Fantastic. Do we have Dr. Schrand on the line?
Yes, I am here.
Okay. Yay. Well, let me give you a proper introduction. We have Dr. Joseph Schrand, the author of Do You Really Get Me? Finding Value in Yourself and Others Through Empathy and Connection. He's an instructor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Ooh, how impressive. Mm-hmm. And he supervises psychiatry residents for Harvard South Shore and applies his IM approach as medical director of CASEL, which stands for Clean and Sober Teens Living Empowered. He's part of High Point Treatment Center. He's also the author of The Fear Reflex and Outsmarting Anger. Yay! Thank you for coming on our show, Dr. Schrand.
Oh, I am honored to be here.
May we call you Dr. Joseph?
Dr. Joe, Dr. Joseph, I've been called anything. But Dr. Joe is good. Let's do that. Dr. Joe.
I like
Dr.
that.
Dr. Joe.
It's kind of hip.
Welcome. Okay, cool. We can do a rhyme. Dr. Joe, welcome to our show.
I like that.
Okay, we have lots of questions for you. Yes. So very excited about this book. And do you want to just launch in and tell us what is the IM approach?
Oh, I'd be delighted. So, you know, I was looking at Coach Kelly's website and Dr. Deborah's website, and you guys are so on the same page with what I'm talking about here. The IM approach is suggesting that we are always doing the best we can at any moment in time, with the potential to change in the very next second to another I am. So the I am, this is who I am, is your current maximum potential. At this moment in time, you're doing the best you can with the potential to change in the very next second to another I am. And this really is a paradigm shift, and some people don't agree with me. Mm-hmm. But why not start looking at each other as doing the best we can instead of less than we can? You know, don't you think that that might change the way somebody thinks about themselves and about you when we start looking at each other that way?
Absolutely. Sure. I love that. Yeah, very encouraging, actually. I'm going to apply that with Christopher this week.
So just like just basically being the best version of yourself is what you're saying.
That's right, at this moment. But that's not the best you can ever be. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that there really is a best or a worst. I'm saying, why not say, at this moment in time, this is the best I can do in response to these four domains. And the four domains that influence the I am, the first one is what I call the I see domain, how I see myself, but how I think other people see me. And that really is the focus of this book, Do You Really Get Me? It's really about something called theory of mind, and we'll get into that a bit deeper. But just for now, so the first domain is the I see domain. How do I see myself? But more importantly, how do I think other people see me? That then influences your biological domain of your brain and your body. And you know it's true. You know that you feel differently when somebody says, oh, you're amazing. Yeah. Then, well, you know, you're not that great. Mm-hmm. You get a different feeling. Right?
Sure,
so
sure.
Where are the influences on these two internal domains? They're outside us. The home domain, and I don't think anybody's going to argue with me that the home has had an enormous influence on who you are today.
Yes.
And then the rest of the world, the social domain. And stuff that happens at home influences the choices you make in the social domain, which influences the choices you make at home. They all influence the way you see yourself, the way you think other people see you, which affects your brain and your body. But my contention is that at every moment, we are responding the best we can at that moment to those influences around us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. That's the I am approach.
It's very kind. I like it.
Me too. Yeah, exactly. I love anything that's like really bettering yourself, not criticizing, not, you know, but just doing the opposite. Like, how can we just, you know, be stronger, better? I love it.
Yeah, and you know, even shifting away from that and saying, you know, I wonder why am I doing what I'm doing? We have evolved this remarkable part of our brain. You know, so if you're listening, audience, as long as you have one hand free, don't use both hands, you just put your hand on your forehead. Right behind there is your prefrontal cortex, a really fancy scientific way of saying the front of your brain.
Yeah.
Right? That's where thinking is happening. That's where your ability to solve problems, to execute a plan, to anticipate the consequence of that plan, but it's also where theory of mind lives. We have developed this remarkable ability to really tune in to wonder what other people are thinking or feeling. It is critical. It is the fundamental building block of all human relationships. Everything. It's theory of mind. And we call it theory of mind, not because it's a theory, but because we can't see somebody's mind.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to guess. We got to theorize. What is that person really thinking or feeling? How do they think or feel about me? How should I respond to that person? That's what relationships are. We're always fluidly assessing. So that's why I wrote this book, because I want people to know what's happening in their brain and in everyone's brain.
Mm-hmm.
And once you know this, yeah, you can use it, you know, at will. It's yours. You've been using it all along. But how many people know about theory of mind?
Not many.
Exactly.
So. Absolutely. This is awesome. You know, I'd like to take us a slightly different direction to the word empathy. As Coach Kelly knows that that's sort of my favorite word on the planet. And in my own practice with couples, I'm always starting with empathy. If there's no empathy there, it's very impossible to have any kind of good work going on. So why don't you define for us the word empathy? Because I know it's a commonly misused word.
Empathy is really our ability to take someone's perspective.
Mm.
It's our ability to appreciate what somebody else is thinking or feeling and our influence on that. And, you know, I also work with couples. And when I have a couple that really is arguing and they really disagree, I'll say to them this. I'll say, so do you disagree with what your husband's saying? And we'll say, yes, I do. And say to them, do you disagree with what your wife is saying? Yes, I do. And I say, well, wait a second, let me understand this. You both disagree. When's the last time you agreed on anything? And now here it is. You're both agreeing that you disagree.
Yeah,
how cool is that?
Yes.
You know? And now you've got this beginning, right, where they're beginning to look at each other's perspective. So that's what empathy is. Empathy is our deep human condition where we are interested. We are interested, and the reason we're interested in what other people think or feel is because we know it matters,
right,
to them.
Sure.
That's what's so cool about empathy. When it's not there, other people can get very, very angry, anxious, or sad,
yeah,
because they worry, hey, that person doesn't care at all about me.
Sure, right.
And that then taps into this other very deep, primitive part of who we are. So we talked a bit about the prefrontal cortex, that front part of their brain,
mm-hmm,
but there's this other part, the emotional part of the brain, the irrational part of the brain, the impulsive part of the brain. We call that the limbic system.
Mm-hmm.
The limbic system, an ancient part of our brain that is designed really to wonder whether somebody feels something about us. So if the prefrontal cortex is thinking, the limbic system is feeling.
Mm.
Really interesting, a different little distinction between the two.
Yeah.
I feel like there should be like a class in like in high school about all about this. I feel like this is amazing life lessons that everybody should learn because, you know, we have to communicate with one another. We have to be in relationships. And this is really, really, you know, profound to know and to learn.
And you know what? When I was doing an interview, somebody said they wished that they had read Do You Really Get Me in the 8th grade.
Yeah. I was going to say preschool.
You know, it's written in a way that, that everyone can understand it. You know, I may work for Harvard, but I'm not going to write in the Harvard-y scientific, you know,
right,
who the heck understands what he's saying way.
Yeah.
You know, this is tapping into, so you're right, in middle school.
Yeah.
Where we're so interested and really worried what other people think or feel about us. This book can be really helpful because if you're doing it, everyone's doing it.
Exactly.
Just think about it. Everyone's doing it, which means that people are always interested in what you think about them.
Right.
Which means at any moment in time, you have an opportunity to remind someone of their value.
Yeah.
But really just as easily, you can devalue them. You can make them a member of your group, or you can alienate them from your group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what this book is really looking at. How do we do that? It's theory of mind. It's the I am approach as a way to remove ourselves from that judgment. It's a position of respect. And that's what the I am is really saying. It's about respect. Respect leads to value, and value leads to trust. And isn't that the kind of person you want to be and the person you want to be around?
Mm-hmm.
Person who respects and values you? Well, you can do that. You've got the brain tool to do it. You've had it all along.
Love that.
Love that. So. Yeah. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Debra and Coach Kelly and our special guest, Dr. Joseph Schrand, the author of Do You Really Get Me? Finding Value in Yourself and Others Through Empathy and Connection. If you have a question for Dr. Joe or for us, you can call us at 323-203-0815. I am dying to know what the IMAX factor in lying is for our audience. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Isn't lying amazing?
I love it.
Right? You know, and we do it in little ways sometimes, in really big, dark ways. But why? Why have we evolved lying? Well, lying comes right out of theory of mind. If we're so interested in what other people think or feel about us and worry that they will not see us as valuable, we may bend the truth a little bit so that they maintain their image of us as valuable. But we do that with others. We say, oh, love your hair. Oh, great dress. Or, you know, this was a really, really good meal. And part of you is going, it's not.
Right.
But you don't want to hurt the other person's feelings.
Yeah.
Right? You want to have them to maintain the integrity of their sense of value. So, yeah, bend a little bit. But then there are dark lies. If those ones I just talked about are white lies, there are the strategic lies that really are designed to exploit someone, to hurt someone, to take advantage of someone. And, you know, one of the best examples really is Bernie Madoff, who made off with all our money. I'm sure somebody's used that line before.
Yeah.
but you know, he got people to think, I will make you rich.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, I'll be more valuable. And then completely ripped them off. So lying can go both ways as well. But we lie to protect the integrity of our own sense of value when it's a white lie. When it's a strategic lie, a dark lie, we use it to exploit somebody else. But it's all based on theory of mind. I mean, really, really good con artists are really good because they convince you that they're honest.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. I had a client who came to me. He was court ordered to see me, and he was an older gentleman, and he stole, he got caught stealing from Costco. And he was so incredibly charming.
Really?
I mean, he was a con artist his whole life. And I was like, oh my God, like I can see how he could con people. I mean, he was so charming and like, you know, just, it was so convincing. It was almost scary.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I know what you're saying.
Really good at theory of mind,
yeah.
But not at the empathy part.
Yes.
You see, there's this distinction between the two, right? If you really think about it, it was more important as we were evolving, it was more important to wonder if someone was looking at me as their lunch than if they were hungry.
Mm.
These are two different things. The first is wondering, how is someone going to view me? The second is caring about somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And con artists are really good at how are you going to view me, but they don't care about you.
Mm-mm. Oh, that's such a good way
so
to look
true.
At it. Yeah, because I remember asking him, like, how would you feel if your, you know, if your daughter or your granddaughter, you know, had stolen, you know, something or this, and he couldn't like put himself in that situation. Yeah, he just didn't have that empathy chip.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many of them out there.
Yeah. Exactly.
But you know what's really, really scary is that we can all do it as well, and we do it. I think that's what happens when we argue with people.
Oh, like we're
you know,
talking about.
Because when we argue, we really are interested in what they think about us, but we don't care about them. And we say things that we can regret for years, but we say it because we shut down empathy in that moment of limbic rage. We are emotional and irrational, and we're not thinking about the consequence of saying that horrible thing to the person.
Right.
And then later, you might slap yourself on the forehead as if you're trying to jumpstart your prefrontal cortex. Go, oh, what were they thinking?
Yeah.
You weren't. You were limbic. That's why one of the mantras about the IM approach is keep it frontal, don't go limbic.
I love that. That is so cute.
Keep it frontal, don't go limbic. I'm going to do that.
That's so cute.
Yeah, I like
so,
it.
Okay, so I have a couple questions. Like, if you could give maybe three tips to people to better communicate, what would you say? Or three problems that you've noticed and kind of how to work on that?
The first thing is to remember that people don't get angry when they feel respected. Really, think about it. When's the last time you got angry at someone treating you with respect? You know, you really don't. That was the whole subject of Outsmarting Anger, which was my book a couple of years ago. It actually won Books for Better Life Award in psychology. So Outsmarting Anger, it's about respect. So the first thing is always, always use this I am approach. When you use the I am approach, you can wonder why someone does what they do without judging it. So that's the first thing. Treat people with respect. And then communicate clearly with them. You know, what is it that you're interested in? What are they interested in? If it's about anger, per se, anger is an emotion designed to change things. We get angry when we want somebody to do something different, start doing something or stop doing something. So the second tip is, whenever you see anger, wonder, what does that person want to see different? Right? Because there's something that they want to see different. It doesn't mean that they're trying to hurt you. It just means they want something to change. Through their I see domain, they want you to see them as differently.
Right.
So that's the second tip. Right. Then the third tip, relax. You are doing the best you can at every moment in time. When you begin to really respect yourself, then the things that other people say about you slide off your back quite a bit easier. Because you can wonder, huh, why is the best that person can do is try to put me down? What's going on in their IC domain, in their brain and body? What happened at home or the rest of the world that this is their I am? The best they can do is try to put me down. It changes the way we approach people. Because we don't judge them. Now, look, I never said with the I am that you got to like what somebody does.
Right.
I never said you got to condone it and say, well, you know, I can put up with that. I never said that you don't hold a person responsible. You hold them completely responsible because what they do affects somebody else's I am. But rather than judge it, let's look at it again. Let's look again at why they're doing what they're doing. Again is re, look is spect. This is a position of respect. And that then just makes somebody feel valuable, and then they trust you. And, you know, we could get into the whole neurochemistry, what happens in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a chemical called oxytocin, not OxyContin, but oxytocin, that is that chemical of pleasure when somebody says, you're amazing, and you get that rush.
Yeah.
Well, that feels great. We can do that. So the I am approach leads to two really important sort of principles. The first is, because the four domains are interconnected, a small change in any one domain can have a big effect. That's important, especially in a couples therapy or at work or wherever you are. You don't have to change everything at once. If you try to change everything, you're going to get overwhelmed, you're going to feel stressed, you're going to feel angry, anxious, or sad. So relax. A small change can have a big effect. The second principle, though, is that because everyone has an I am, everyone has an I see domain, interested in what you think or feel about them, because you're part of someone's or home or social domain, you control no one, but you influence everyone. Just think about that for a moment. You control no one, but you influence everyone. That's remarkable power. And you get to choose what kind of influence you want to be. And any one of them is going to be an I am.
So cool.
Yeah, really, I'm just mesmerized. I had nothing to say. Keep going.
I know.
Sorry.
You see, my oxytocin just like went through the roof with that comment. Thank you.
You're welcome. Whenever you're doing a lecture, I want to come listen.
Yeah,
I want to get some CEUs from you.
I'd be happy to. I tell you, the way I open a lot of these talks is like this. I ask the audience to put up their left index finger right in front of their nose. So you might, if you can do that without hurting yourself or driving into somebody, and just close your left eye. Look at your finger and close your left eye. And now switch back and forth between your eyes. Your left eye, your right eye, left eye. You see how your finger's moving back and forth?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Because your eyes are geographically slightly located differently.
Mm-hmm.
They have a slightly different place in the world. And so each eye has a slightly different perspective of the world. Now multiply that by 7 billion. There are 7 billion perspectives on the world.
Yeah.
And it is more fun to wonder about them than to judge them. Right. Now what I would ask the audience, and you know, if I did this talk, I'd say, okay, everybody close both eyes and count to three. They close both eyes, they count to three, and then I say, open your eyes. That's trust. Because what you have done is trusted that the person next to you is not going to try to take something from you.
Right.
And isn't that what we try to do as therapists? Our job
Hold
is
on
to
a second. My purse is missing.
Us.
Kelly? Kelly, did you just take my purse?
No,
I'm kidding.
Yeah, but you know, you don't have to like it, but you can wonder, geez, right. Kelly can't pay her rent this week? What's going on?
Sorry, I just had to throw a little sense of humor in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, so yes, because you trusted somebody by closing your eyes that they wouldn't take something from you.
Right, but that's what we do as therapists, because we are trying to help people open their eyes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The only way we're going to be able to do that is by letting them know that we respect them, we value them, and we invite them to trust. Mm-hmm. We're interested. I have the luxury of saying, I'm a psychiatrist, not a judge. I'm just interested in what people do.
Right.
But all of us can say, I'm a human being, not a judge.
Right.
I'd rather be interested in what your perspective is than judge you for it. And when you do that, that other person begins to feel valuable and they will trust. That's what Theory of Mind is all about. It's the brain tool that lets us help other people feel valued through our eyes. And you know, when you help somebody feel valuable, you increase your own value. People want to be around a person who makes them feel good.
Sure.
That's what it's about. And that's Theory of Mind.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my saying is when you're angry with somebody, instead of being angry, get curious. Get mm-hmm. curious at both at yourself and get curious about the other person. My version of non-judgmentalness. Yeah, I totally
exactly.
agree.
Exactly. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Because we wonder. It's so much more fun to wonder than judge. I mean, as soon as you judge, you put up a wall. You've got a wall between you and somebody else.
It's so true.
Because nobody wants to feel judged. Right.
It's so sad that we do have an illusion of a sense of being empowered when we feel judgmental, like we're righteous and strong. And really, it's the weakest position on the planet.
It's
and yet,
so
we get this just silly idea in our minds that we're actually empowered.
Yeah. Right.
It's ridiculous.
And then imagine that a whole group does that.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Right? Or a whole nation does that. Or a whole religious sect does that.
Right.
That's when it gets really dangerous. An entire group that has great membership among themselves, but at the cost of creating an out-group, alienating an entire group of people, all of whom now are going to create their group and fight back because nobody wants to feel without value. Look, a million years ago, we weren't the biggest animal, we weren't the fastest, we weren't the strongest. We were these small little mammals scurrying around, hoping not to be lunch. I mean, we were prey. And then we formed these small social groups. And our survival potential increased so dramatically that human beings are now pretty much everywhere. We're everywhere. But to be part of that group, you have to contribute. You have to have value. And the way we ascertain the value is through Theory of Mind.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see me as someone who's going to be a valuable member of this group? Because then I can relax. I know I'm not going to be kicked out. I know I'm not going to be lunch. It's the deep, ancient, limbic part of our thinking. Sometimes we call it the unconscious.
Hmm.
But that's what's going on. You worry. Do you see me as valuable?
And is that the same as sort of feeling the need to belong to a group? It's all
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because we have safety. We have safety. We're not going to be lunch. You know, one of the other exercises I ask folks to do is just stand back to back with each other and tell the other person what you see right in front of you. Because when you do that, you and your partner have a 360-degree view of the world around you.
Mm.
You don't have that when you stand alone. Mm. You could be attacked by a predator behind you. But as soon as you really have someone's back, both of you are safer.
Right.
Right.
It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
I like that image.
I have a question for you, Dr. Joe. Can you, this may be a little bit outside of the book, but can you give some tips for parents on how to teach empathy to their children?
Well, I will tell you personally, I have four kids of my own.
Okay, cool.
And I am blessed because each one of them is who they are and want to be, not who I wanted them to be. Luckily, it turned out pretty good. But I think that that's a major part of it. A parent can model empathy for their kid. Their kid is watching. Believe me, parents, your kids are watching. How you treat your partner is going to have a huge influence on your kids. Mm-hmm. If you are disrespecting your partner, don't be surprised if your kid thinks disrespect is part of what I get to do. Right. I mean, my parents do it, so I'll do it. Mm-hmm. Teach them respect. Show them respect. One of the tips that I use is a simple technique called stop, look, and listen. Stop what you're doing. You lead a busy life. I know that. But stop for a moment. Look at your kid. Make eye contact with them if they're comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. And then listen. Listen to what they're saying. As soon as you do that, you remind them that they are respected and valued by you.
Yeah.
And that increases their trust. And they begin to trust the world around them. Because that's what we want. We don't want naive kids or kids who are going to be exploited. We want interested kids in the world who are willing to take that creative risk. They're not going to take that creative risk if they don't think they're going to be valued, if they think they're going to be mocked and ridiculed. Mm-hmm. So stop, look, and listen. Treat each other with respect. Your kids are going to learn how to do that too.
It's really beautiful.
Kelly, I asked that question on your behalf. When you go home in London, yeah, just throwing a fit.
Exactly.
Stop, look, and listen.
Yeah, exactly.
And remember, the kid who's throwing a fit, it's their I am.
Yeah.
Right? They're doing what's the best going they can on in their biological domain?
I can think of another word, not I am. I'll go with yours. But I'll go with yours. Yeah, so what is going on with them?
Yep.
Okay. All right, I'm going to take that with me.
Absolutely.
Well, do you have any closing thoughts for our audience out there? What do you hope that readers will learn from Do You Really Get Me, or any other closing words you want to share?
What I hope is that people understand that this theory of mind is not a scientific idea. It's real. It's part of who you are. It's part of who everyone is. But now that you know it, you can use what has been an intuition and make it a technique. You can really use theory of mind and the I am approach at every moment to improve your life and somebody else's by remembering you're doing the best you can. Relax. We spend so much time trying to get ahead, trying to do better. Wellness, illness, all these labels we put on ourselves. Relax. You are at an I am. That's what I want people to take home. That's why I really want them to get Do You Really Get Me? You know, I've written several books. This book, mm-hmm, I want in the hands of people, not for me, but for you. You can really remember that you don't need self-help books. The real way to help yourself is to remind somebody else that they're valuable. Mm. It's going to get you far ahead in life.
That's nice.
Kelly, you are very valuable in my eyes.
It does make you feel good. I can feel the oxytocin.
Doesn't it?
But you too. I really feel that way.
And Dr. Joe, you are very valuable in our eyes as well. This is amazing.
I know you really get me.
Yeah.
So please, go grab the book. You can get it off on Amazon. And if people do buy it from Amazon or wherever they do, please read it. Write a comment. Because it's those comments that are going to like propel other people to read it as well and mm-hmm. go, maybe there's something that I can learn from that, too. My friend did. I trust them.
Right.
So I'll do it.
Awesome. Thank you, Dr. Joseph Schrand. Pick up a copy of his book, Do You Really Get Me? Finding Value in Yourself and Others Through Empathy and Connection. Dr. Schrand, is there a website that goes along with this?
Yep, drschrand.com, drschrand.com, and you can browse through some of the blogs. I do a lot of work with adolescents and addiction. We're doing this really cool program now called Drug Story Theater. We're teaching kids improvisational theater and psychodrama. They create their own shows about the seduction of addiction to and recovery from drugs and alcohol. They perform them for middle schools and high schools. It's all about theory of mind. The treatment of one becomes the prevention of many. That's the mantra for Drug Story Theater. It's really what this is about. You treat someone with respect, you can prevent all sorts of bad things happening.
That's so cool.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Dr. Joe.
Thanks for having me, folks. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Take care.
Wow, that so was cool. Just awesome. Oh my God. I'm going to go home and practice as much of this as I can, because I think it's really,
it's really helpful.
You know, some people have a certain kind of language that
you connect with. Yeah.
Right? It really gets to me, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And others that you just can't really follow, but this totally makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I really, really like it. Yeah. Okay. So cool. Hey, all of you out there, we want you to start liking us on our Facebook, and you can send us your emails, obviously.
And then next week, we have Kevin DeMasso wrote an amazing book called Porn Free. It's How to Free Your Addiction from Porn. He's a young guy. I can't wait to hear about that and kind of what he has to say about
that. It's a really good.
So cool.
He's extremely bright. Reading it. Yeah. Okay. So another great show.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary month,
you
Coach
too.
Kelly. Okay. Right. Bye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.